Yes, Sankar, did you like the chanting? Chanting is good enough. There's nothing to do now. There's nowhere to go. Just enjoy ourselves. A drink for you. Dear friends, good morning. This morning we will address the parliament of the world religion, the many thousand people over there. And we share this Dhamma talk with many people. There will be many rabbis, Protestant ministers, Catholic priests, swamis, and so on. And the Parliament of World Religion has been meeting from the 3rd of this month until the 9th. And we know that on the 7th, tomorrow, there will be the opening of the Copenhagen Conference. World leaders will be there in order to discuss about global warming, climate change, and so on. So they need our energy, our support, both the politicians and the spiritual leaders. Let us enjoy our breathing, our tea. Dear Sangha, this morning we have chanted, we have practiced sitting meditation and chanting in order to send our energy to support the Parliament of World Religion, also to support the Copenhagen Conference on Climate Change. We are with them. Whether they are in Melbourne or are in Copenhagen, we are with them. We want to support them. All of us are trying to bring about a kind of collective awakening. Yes, collective awakening, that is what we need. If we have that collective awakening, and then everything will be fine. Everyone will be able to live in such a way that make a were possible for us and for our children. With that collective awakening, we go do together, we go live together in such a way that we'll be able to save the planet and to make a future for our children and their children. In Plum Village, we are in a 3-month retreat. There are about 250 of us, monastics and lay people, practicing together for the whole of 90 days. We practice sitting meditation in the morning, in the afternoon. We get up at 5 o'clock and we practice joyfully as a spiritual family. We listen to Dharma talks, we practice walking meditation, we practice eating in mindfulness, we practice cooking, cleaning, doing everything in mindfulness. We want to practice so that every moment of our daily life can be a peaceful moment, can be a nourishing moment, can be a happy moment. We are trying our best. And we have created a very kind of, a very powerful kind of energy with our collective practice. And we want to offer that to the Parliament of World Religion. We want to offer that to the Copenhagen meeting. And practicing the 3 months, the 3 month retreat is our simple and modest way to contribute to the event of collective awakening. We should wake up by ourselves before we can help other people to wake up. That is our principle. And what our friends in the Parliament of World Religion are doing is for that also. You have come to Melbourne in order together to provoke, to help bring about a collective awakening. Thank you for being there and doing your best. And you in Copenhagen, you have come with a lot of hope. And we want you to know that we are all behind you. We need a leadership that can help save the planet. In principle, we know that our techniques are good enough to substitute the kind of fuels we are using with renewable sources of energies. We can make use of the water, the air, and the sunshine and replace totally the gasoline and the coal 100% by the year 2030. If we are strong enough, if we are united enough. But we need a leadership. But that leadership is not only political, it should be spiritual. Because these techniques cannot be realized unless we can bring, transform our fear, our anger, our craving. The 3 kinds of poisons that are in our society and in every one of us. If we continue to fight and kill each other in Afghanistan, in Iraq, and elsewhere, because we have still have a lot of fear, we have a lot of violence and anger in us. We know that in order for the source of renewable energies like water and sunshine, the technology should be supported, encouraged by all of us. It's still very expensive, this new kind of energies. They are not competitive compared to gasoline and coal. So we should have enough money in order to subsidize the companies that are creating these source of energies, so that the price of the energy will be competitive, and you have to tax heavily the use of gasoline and coal in order to discourage people from using that kind of fuels. And that's the way. But how can we have enough money, enough resources in order to support new sources of energies? We are using a lot of money in order to manufacture weapons. The big powers are still creating a lot of weapons. The weapon industries in the United States of America, in Great Britain, in France, is a very important source of income for these powers. Why the people in other countries need to buy weapons? Because they have fear. Iran is trying to become a nuclear power, and North Korea also wants the same kind of thing. And the foundation of that action is fear. They want to protect themselves. And those of us who sell weapons, we say that our weapons are very modern. If you are equipped with these weapons, you'll be safe. So they play on our fear. They want us to buy their weapons. So that is why fear is something we should remove, we should transform together with anger. Terrorism is anger. Terrorism is also fear. Terrorists have a lot of violence and fear, but anti-terrorists also have a lot of fear and anger also. Therefore, political leadership is not enough. We need spiritual leadership. And you are there in Melbourne in order to tell us how to do it, how to recognize the poison of violence, the poison of anger, the poison of fear in us, so that we can transform them. We can do it as individuals, and we can do it as groups of people. Last year, during the winter retreat, 1 year ago, in Plum Village we had also many hundreds of people practicing together. We sit together, we walk together, and we practice looking very deeply in order to try to find out whether there is a way in order to a spiritual way that can help us out of this difficult situation. We were contemplating the topics of a global spirituality, a global ethics, and we wanted to practice looking deeply and to share our insights about a Buddhist vision for a global ethic, for a global spirituality. And why practicing, generating the energy of brotherhood, sisterhood, love, happiness, we have been able to produce also a text on the five mindfulness trainings, which is at the foundation of the Buddhist practice of peace and happiness. After the 3 month winter retreat, we had the French speaking retreat. And during that retreat, we practiced the same kind of looking. The theme of meditation was also global ethics, global spirituality. And after the French-speaking retreat, we had the 21-day retreat. Many Dhamma teachers came from many different countries, about 40. And we also practiced together during 21 days in order to look deeply and to produce a kind of vision, Buddhist vision for global spirituality, for global ethics. We want to make it concrete, the practice that we are taking. And during the summer opening, which lasted 1 month, we also focus our attention on that topic, how to bring about a vision of global spirituality, global ethics. And finally, at the end of the summer retreat, we were able to produce the new version of the 5 mindfulness trainings. The 5 mindfulness trainings for us Buddhists is the kind of spiritual practice that can bring about true happiness, true love, that can protect lives, save the earth, restore communication, and bring about the healing of the planet and of every one of us on earth. So the 5 mindfulness trainings are for us the Buddhist vision for a global spirituality, the Buddhist version of global ethic. And we are in the process of translating this text into a non-Buddhist language so that you can exchange, share it with other friends who practice in other traditions. Let us enjoy breathing in and out for a moment. Breathing in, I feel alive. Breathing out, I smile to life in me and around me. Dear friends, in the Buddhist tradition, we believe that peace, love, happiness are possible right in the present moment. A good practitioner can produce a moment, a feeling of peace, of happiness, whenever she wants to. A good practitioner is capable of recognizing the pain, the sorrow in him, capable of embracing it and transform it. A good practitioner can look deeply, recognize the pain, the sorrow in the other person, and with his or her compassion and insight, can help the other person do the same, recognizing his suffering, embrace it and transform it, learning how to produce a moment of happiness, of peace. And that is the training. When we practice mindful breathing, we bring our mind back to our body. And we become fully present in the here and the now. And when we are truly present in the here and the now, we can help our body to be more peaceful. There may be tension and pain in our body. The practice of mindful breathing taught by the Buddha can help us release the tensions and the pain in our body. And then if there is a feeling of pain, a painful feeling in us, a painful emotion in us, we know how to recognize it. We don't want to suppress it. We are able to recognize it, to embrace it, and with the energy of mindfulness, we can bring a relief. And with the practice of looking deeply, we can see into the true nature, the roots of that affliction, in order to be able to transform it. And the Buddha said that it is possible for us to live happily right in the present moment. It is possible to live with peace right in the present moment, although we still have some pain, some sorrow, some worries in us. If we know how to handle the pain, the sorrow, the fear in us. All of us agree that we should bring into our daily life a spiritual dimension. Without a spiritual dimension, we don't know how to handle our happiness and our suffering and help other people. And spiritual teachers have the duty to set an example and to help other people to do the same. Buddhism is about awakening. But to me, one Buddha is no longer enough. We need many Buddhas. Every one of us should become a Buddha. And that is why we use the term collective awakening. Awakening about what? When we breathe in and bring our mind back to our body, when we are truly there, body and mind united, there is already awakening. We know that we are alive. We are present, and life is there for us to live. That is already a kind of awakening. So awakening is not something very far away. But we need to bring our mind back to our body and be there truly in the present moment. Being in the present moment, we recognize that there are so many wonders of life that are in us and around us. And if we know how to get in touch with these wonders of life, we can get the nourishment and the healing right away, and peace and happiness can be possible right away. With mindfulness, we can realize that we already have more than enough conditions to be happy. We are luckier than so many people. And if we can recognize the conditions of our happiness, we can be happy right here, right now. And you don't have to struggle anymore. You don't have to run into the future anymore. You don't have to look for happiness elsewhere and in the future, because happiness is possible in the present moment. That is the teaching of the Buddha, Drishta Dhamma Sukha Vihara, living happily right in the present moment. And that is a practice that can help many of us to release our craving, our anger, our fear. Because if we have happiness already, we don't need to fight, to worry anymore. And we have plenty of happiness in order to share. With collective awakening, we can stop the course of destruction of our society and of the earth. With awakening, we don't think anymore that more power is needed for us to be happy. More wealth, more sex, more fame is needed. We are happy enough, more than enough, in order to sacrifice our time running after these objects of craving. That is why, in order to save our planet, we need to have a new view of happiness. Every one of us has an idea of how to be happy. Every one of us has a view on happiness. It is because of that view that we have sacrificed our time. We have run after objects of our desire. We have destroyed our body and our mind to a very important extent. And that is why it's very important to have a new view about happiness. And according to the teacher of Buddhism, the Buddha, he said that, well, happiness is simple. If you go home to the present moment, you realize that you have more conditions to be happy right here and right now. All the wonders of life are in you and around you. And that is why in Plum Village we practice the fifth mantra. This is already a moment of happiness. Before sitting meditation, we recite the mantra. Before sharing lunch or dinner, we share the mantra. Before working together in the field, in the vegetable garden, we practice the mantra. And happiness can come right away. So easy, so simple. This is a moment of happiness. Yes, we are very lucky. We are still alive. And our planet is beautiful. We have to be really there in the present moment to live deeply in that moment. We can get the nourishment and healing in the here and the now. And you have to release that kind of craving, that kind of anger, that kind of hate that has destroyed much of us and much of the world. when you practice walking meditation, for instance, we focus our attention on our in-breath and out-breath. And every time we breathe in, we can make one or two steps or three steps. We are fully aware of the contact between us, between our foot and the ground. We walk as if we kiss the earth with our foot. Because we are entirely in the present moment. That is why every step we make bring us home deeply in the present moment. And with every step we touch all the wonders of life that are in us and around us. That's very nourishing, very healing. Not healing only to us, but healing to the earth. We have done injustice to the earth. We have done a lot of damage to the earth. And walking like that, kissing the earth with every step, we heal ourselves and we heal the earth. And this practice is not only for the Buddhists. Everyone can do. Muslim, Christians, Jews, communists. We all can enjoy walking like that. And every step like that can bring solidity, freedom, peace, and joy. And that is why I recommend that we practice walking meditation every day in Plumlish. There is only one style of walking, mindful walking. Whenever you need to go from one place to another place, walking meditation is the way of moving. Transportation. And it's, every step is nourishing and healing. And walk in such a way that every step can bring you joy and peace and love and healing. And it does not cost anything at all. You have to walk every day. You don't have to reserve one specific period of time for the walking. So every time we need to walk, we can bring our mind back to our body, smile, breathe in and out mindfully, and walk like a Buddha, walk like an enlightened one. And peace, happiness, love, brotherhood, sisterhood become possible. When you practice sitting meditation, you do the same. Most of us are so busy. We don't have the time for ourselves. Sitting meditation is to do nothing, to go nowhere. Sitting meditation first is to realize that you are alive, that to be alive is a wonder. You can enjoy your in-breath, your out-breath. You can generate the energy of peace. You can help your body to release tension and pain. You can bring in a feeling of joy, of happiness. You can recognize the feeling of pain, sorrow, in order to bring relief and to release it and transform it. And sitting meditation is a kind of daily food. Walking meditation also. And in Plum Village, we don't deprive ourselves with that kind of nourishment. Each session of sitting meditation is consumption. And while we sit together, we produce the collective energy of peace, of mindfulness, that penetrates in every one of us. And that is consumption. Very good kind of food. Peace, brotherhood, mindfulness. And if we go to the sitting every day, several times, because we don't want to deprive us with that kind of nourishment. Every day we go for walking meditation together for 1 hour. And during we walk, the time we walk together, we produce also the collective energy of brotherhood, sisterhood, peace. And we enjoy every step. We walk in such a way that make the ground become the kingdom of God, the pure land of the Buddha. The pure land of the Buddha is there or not, it depends on us, not on the Buddha. If you are mindful, if you know how to touch the wonders of life that are in you and around you with your steps, and then the place you are become the kingdom of God or the land, the pure land of the Buddha. So it is possible for all of us to enjoy walking in the pure land of the Buddha, in the kingdom of God, every day. And if we are happy enough, we don't need anymore to run after the objects of our craving, namely fame, power, sex, wealth. And that is why collective awakening is so important. The five mindfulness trainings are the guideline for our practice. And the first training is about how to protect life, how to protect the earth. There are many ways to protect life and protect the earth. And live in such a way that help you to recognize what is going on in yourself and around you, and might help you to practice this precept. I go ask Sister Dedication to read the first mindfulness training, and I will say something about that.
Five mindfulness trainings. The five mindfulness trainings represent the Buddhist vision for a global spirituality and ethic. They are a concrete expression of the Buddha's teachings on the Four Noble Truths and the Noble Eightfold Path. The path of right understanding and true love, leading to healing, transformation, and happiness for ourselves and for the world. To practice the five mindfulness trainings is to cultivate the insight of interbeing, or right view, which can remove all discrimination, intolerance, anger, fear, and despair. If we live according to the five mindfulness trainings, we are already on the path of a bodhisattva. Knowing we are on that path, we are not lost in confusion about our life in the present or in fears about the future. The first mindfulness training, reverence for life. Aware of the suffering caused by the destruction of life, I am committed to cultivating the insight of interbeing and compassion and learning ways to protect the lives of people, animals, plants, and minerals. I am determined not to kill, not to let others kill, and not to support any act of killing in the world, in my thinking, or in my way of life. Seeing that harmful actions arise from anger, fear, greed, and intolerance, which in turn come from dualistic and discriminative thinking, I will cultivate openness, non-discrimination, and non-attachment to views in order to transform violence, fanaticism, and dogmatism in myself and in the world.
We know that war is a product of misunderstanding, wrong perceptions. We have wrong perceptions on ourselves and on the other people. And from that wrong perceptions arise a lot of anger and fear. And that is why, in order to end wars, we should try to help each other remove our wrong perceptions. The cause of violence, the cause of war and wrong perceptions is also our attachment to our views. We become intolerant because we believe that our view about truth is the only correct one, and we should destroy other kind of views, and that lead to fanaticism, intolerance, and war. And that is why the first mindfulness trainings encourage us to look deeply in order to change our way of thinking. We have to look deeply in order to see the nature of interconnectedness of everything, in order to release our dualistic thinking. And with that, we can transform our discrimination and anger, because with openness, we'll be able to understand the views of others in order to bring us together. I think people in the spiritual religious traditions can help greatly on this practice. We should be able to listen deeply, to understand, and to release our wrong views. We should be able to use loving speech in order to help the other people to understand us. and deep listening and loving speech is the object of the fourth mindfulness training. Sister Hien Nghiêm will read the fourth training.
The fourth mindfulness training, loving speech and deep listening. Aware of the suffering caused by unmindful speech and the inability to listen to others, I am committed to cultivating loving speech and compassionate listening in order to relieve suffering and to promote reconciliation and peace in myself and among other people, ethnic and religious groups, and nations. Knowing that words can create happiness or suffering, I am committed to speaking truthfully, using words that inspire confidence, joy, and hope. When anger is manifesting in me, I am determined not to speak. I will practice mindful breathing and walking in order to recognize and look deeply into my anger. I know that the roots of anger can be found in my wrong perceptions and lack of understanding of the suffering in myself and the other person. I will speak and listen in a way that can help myself and the other person transform suffering and see the way out of difficult situations. I am determined not to spread news that I do not know to be certain, and not to utter words that can cause division or discord. I will practice right diligence to nourish my capacity for understanding, love, joy, and inclusiveness, and gradually transform anger, violence, and fear that lie deep in my consciousness.
We know that deep listening needs mindfulness, concentration, and compassion. Without compassion, we cannot listen to the other person deeply. When we listen deeply to the other person, we can relieve a lot of her or his suffering. And when we use loving speech, we can better communicate our insight and our idea to the other person. There are those who are capable of using loving speech in a political circle. I think people like Barack Obama is very capable of using loving speech. I think the war in Afghanistan can be ended with the practice of deep listening and loving speech. You don't have to send more troops. The Taliban are human beings like us. And they also love their country, their people, their nation. And we can talk to them. I think President Obama can invite them to the White House, invite them to dinner, to do walking meditation together, and share with them the difficulties of America, and ask them to help. And offer help to solve the problem of Afghanistan. And they can talk about global warming, the danger that our planet is facing. We need our leaders to be together in such a way, not just sitting on the table to talk, but to spend together time as friends, as co-practitioners, like the way we do in Plum Village. We cook together, we clean together, we cook, we walk together, we sit together, we share Dhamma discussions. And we let the other know about our suffering, our difficulties, and we listen to their suffering, their difficulties. I think a peace conference should be organized like that. People come, they have to spend a few weeks living together and sharing together in a very informal way, and establish a real human relationship and understanding each other's, especially the difficulties and the suffering. And then peace negotiation will be successful. And the practice of deep listening to the suffering of the other person and using loving speech in order to try to convey your insight, your ideas, is so important. With the practice of the fourth mindfulness training, you can restore communication in our family and bring back happiness. With the practice of deep listening and loving speech, we can bring warring parties together. I think spiritual leaders have to help political leaders in this respect. They have to work hand in hand. We need a lot of patience, compassion, in order to solve problems like Iran, Afghanistan, and so on. President Obama can go to Iran as a guest and stay a few weeks with the president of Iran. And they should eat together, walk together, share together their suffering, their difficulties. Because President Obama has a lot of difficulties also. And as two human beings living on the earth, they will understand each other and they can release the fear, the anger in each other. We need our political leaders to practice, this kind of spirituality. And we don't need to be member of one religion in order to do so. It's possible to have spirituality without religion. The way we drink our tea can be very spiritual. We drink our tea in such a way that we become alive, that the world shines, that happiness becomes possible in the here and the now. You don't need a God. You don't need a religion in order to do that. And but we don't have the time to do that. We are always running after fame, power, and wealth because we believe that happiness is in that direction. We don't know that happiness is possible right in here and now. So the fourth mindfulness training is also an excellent way to end war. And you know that ending the war is very important. Because we are pouring a lot of money, a lot of human lives into the war. And that money should be used in order to subsidize the companies that are working for to make the renewable source of energy available at a competitive price. Shall we read the second mindfulness training about true happiness? Because our practice is about happiness.
The second mindfulness training, true happiness. Aware of the suffering caused by exploitation, social injustice, stealing, and oppression, I am committed to practicing generosity in my thinking, speaking, and acting. I am determined not to steal and not to possess anything that should belong to others. And I will share my time, energy, and material resources with those who are in need. I will practice looking deeply to see that the happiness and suffering of others are not separate from my own happiness and suffering. That true happiness is not possible without understanding and compassion. And that running after wealth, fame, power and sensual pleasures can bring much suffering and despair. I am aware that happiness depends on my mental attitude and not on external conditions, and that I can live happily in the present moment simply by remembering that I already have more than enough conditions to be happy. I am committed to practicing right livelihood so that I can help reduce the suffering of living beings on Earth and reverse the process of global warming.
Thank you. Thank you. There are so many people who suffer deeply or who even committed suicide. Because they have run too much after the objects of their craving, namely power, fame, wealth, sex. We know that with the practice of mindfulness, we can recognize the many conditions of happiness that are already available. And you can be happy right here and right now. You don't have to consume much. You don't need the fame, power in order to be happy. We have set up communities of practice. Monastics and lay people living together in a very simple way. We enjoy very much our way of life. We eat vegetarian, we don't eat meat, but we don't suffer at all. We know that not eating meat is a wonderful way to help our planet to survive. It's more effective than buying a hybrid car, just eating vegetarian. You can preserve more water. You can cut down pollution. You can preserve the forest by just eating vegetarian. And we know that vegetarian food is very good. In our monastery in Deer Park in Southern California, we have we are able to produce our own electricity, solar energy, 100%. And there are times when 1,000, 2,000 people in Deer Park, and we rely entirely on solar energy, even during the winter. And in all our communities, we practice having a no car day every week. And last year, our friends in America have together offered 100,000 no car days. So that is our way to express our gratitude to the earth, to the Buddha, and to express our happiness. Because living like that, we don't have to suffer, but we are very happy. Simple living can be very happy living at the same time. In our communities, we practice the fifth mantra, and the mantra is very simple. Dear friends, this moment is a moment of happiness. Because when we go home to the present moment, when we go home to the present moment, when we come home to the present moment, we realize that we are so lucky. There are so many conditions of happiness that are available. And you become happy right away. So happiness is possible, is available every moment. And the mantra is so easy to practice. Even if we still have some pain, some worries, we know that we have the Dharma to practice. With the Dharma, with mindfulness, we can very well handle the pain, the suffering in us. That is also happiness. If you have pain and sorrow and fear, and if you don't know how to handle them, that is real suffering. But when you know how to handle the pain, the fear in you, well, you don't have to suffer. The pain may be inevitable, but the suffering is optional. It depends on you. So the second training is about happiness. And the Buddhist insight is that happiness is possible right here and right now if you know how to practice mindfulness. Shall we read the third mindfulness training about true love? Because our practice is about love.
The third mindfulness training, true love. Aware of the suffering caused by sexual misconduct, I am committed to cultivating responsibility and learning ways to protect the safety and integrity of individuals, couples, families, and society. Knowing that sexual desire is not love, and that sexual activity motivated by craving always harms myself as well as others, I am determined not to engage in sexual relations without love and a deep, long-term commitment made known to my family and friends. I will do everything in my power to protect children from sexual abuse and to prevent couples and families from being broken by sexual misconduct. Seeing that the body and mind are one, I am committed to learning appropriate ways to take care of my sexual energy and cultivating loving kindness, compassion, joy, and inclusiveness, the four basic elements of true love, for my greater happiness and the greater happiness of others. Practicing true love, we know that we will continue beautifully into the future.
The third training tells us that love and sexual desire are two different things. It is perfectly possible to have love without sexual desire. And our communities have proven that. It is possible to generate the energy of brotherhood and sisterhood, practicing the Vinaya, the mindfulness trainings, in order to bring about happiness and peace in the community. We know that true love is something that we have to nourish, to practice. The first element of true love is maitri, loving kindness, the capacity to offer joy, to offer happiness. A good practitioner should know how to offer herself a moment of happiness. She might practice the fifth mantra. This moment is a happy moment. I'm very lucky. I'm luckier than many people. And with her mindful breathing, mindful walking, she can bring a moment of happiness to her. And if she is happy, the people around her will not suffer, will be happy also. You practice for yourself, but you practice for us at the same time. And a good practitioner is able to help another person to do the same. If you are happy, and then you know how to use loving speech and deep listening in order to relieve the suffering of the other person and to help the other person to do the same thing that you are capable to do, to bring in a moment of happiness, to know how to handle the anger, the fear, the suffering in himself or herself. And that is the first element of true love, loving kindness, offering yourself, offering the other person happiness. This is a practice, a daily practice. The second element of true love is compassion. Compassion is the capacity to recognize the suffering in you or in the other person and how to bring a relief, how to help transform it. And with the practice of mindful breathing, mindful walking, you can recognize the pain in you. You can help recognize the pain in the other person and bring a relief. And with a deeper way of looking, you can see the roots of that suffering, of that affliction, and help to transform it. So that is true love, helping to bring relief, to transform the suffering in yourself and in the other person. The third element of true love is the joy. True love should bring joy. And if you are mindful of your relationship, you feel that you are very lucky. And joy comes to you. And you smile. And you tell the other person that you are very happy because he is there for you. He's still alive. And every moment of our relationship can be a moment of joy. And the practitioner is capable of generating joy in himself, in herself, and help generating joy in the other person. This is a practice. And the fourth element is equanimity, non-discrimination, inclusiveness. True love does not have any discrimination anymore. I love you, not because you belong to the same tradition, not because you belong to the same country, that your ideas are similar to mine. I love you because my love is the kind of love that embraces everyone on earth. I need to love you. I don't want to see suffering. I want to help remove suffering. So I need to love you. That kind of love embraces everyone. Does not leave anyone out of your love. And that is the fourth element of true love, inclusiveness. And this is the love of the Buddha, and every one of us is trying to practice that, and we make progress every day. There is no more separation. When we look at the other human beings, when we look at animals, plants, and minerals, we can embrace all of these forms of life with our true love, no discrimination. We know that with the insight of interbeing, the well-being of these people has to do with our own well-being. The well-being of animals has to do with our own well-being. The well-being of vegetables and minerals are also important for our own well-being. And therefore, to love them is to love myself. And that is the Buddhist vision of happiness, of true love. Now I would like to conclude with the fifth mindfulness training about nourishment and healing, that is about consuming. I think mindful consuming will help us save the planet and get out of this very difficult situation of ours.
The fifth mindfulness training, nourishment and healing. Aware of the suffering caused by unmindful consumption, I am committed to cultivating good health, both physical and mental, for myself, my family, and my society, by practicing mindful eating, drinking, and consuming. I will practice looking deeply into how I consume the four kinds of nutriments, namely edible foods, sense impressions, volition, and consciousness. I am determined not to gamble or to use alcohol, drugs, or any other products which contain toxins, such as certain websites, electronic games, TV programs, films, magazines, books, and conversations. I will practice coming back to the present moment to be in touch with the refreshing, healing, and nourishing elements in me and around me, not letting regrets and sorrow drag me back into the past, nor letting anxieties, fear, or craving pull me out of the present moment. I am determined not to try to cover up loneliness, anxiety, or other suffering by losing myself in consumption. I will contemplate interbeing and consume in a way that preserves peace, joy, and well-being in my body and consciousness, and in the collective body and consciousness of my family, my society, and the earth.
Thank you, Hien Yang. In Buddhism, we speak of four sources of nutriment. Edible food is only just one. And then the sensory impressions is the second source of consumption. What we view, like television programs, what we read, like magazines, what we listen, like radio and music, are objects of our consumption. With mindfulness, we know how to consume only the items that can bring about peace and well-being into our body and our mind. The practice of mindful consumption in the family, in the community, is a very important way to protect us. Mindful consumption. But I would like to say a few words about the other kind of food. First of all, a source of food called volition. It means your deepest desire, your ideal. Because our desire is a kind of food. If you have a good desire, like the desire to preserve our planet, the desire to help people suffer less, desire to bring safety, to children and others from abuse. That is a good kind of desire, and each of us should have a strong desire in us in order to, for us to be truly alive. If you have no desire in us, in yourself, you are not very alive. And that is called volition, the deepest aspiration that each of us could have. So let us look deeply into ourselves and to identify our deepest desire. If that desire is wholesome, like the desire to help protect the earth, to help end war, and to help the other people to transform and to be happy, that is a good desire. But the desire to run after more fame, more sex, more power, more wealth may not be healthy. And that is why it's very important to look deeply into the nature of our deep desire. And our deep desire should be nourished because it gives us vitality, source. It is a source of joy. You will give up your efforts to help the world if you don't have the support. So that is why we need the fourth kind of desire, the nutriment, that is the collective consciousness. If you live in a bad environment, your ideal, your beginner's mind, your good intention will be gone very quickly. And that is why it's very important to choose a place, a community, a neighborhood where people are producing together the energy of loving kindness, the energy of peace, the energy of brotherhood and sisterhood. And if you live in such in a community, your good desire will be protected and nourished. If you allow yourself to be in a crowd that is very angry, very craving, that has a lot of discrimination and despair, you will have to consume that kind of collective consciousness and you will destroy yourself. That is why environment is another kind of food. And as practitioners, we have to create the kind of environment that can help provide us with the wholesome energy of brotherhood, sisterhood, hope, and peace and happiness. And we should try to create as many as possible these kind of communities in the world. And I think spiritual religious teachers have the duty to do so, creating, setting up communities, living in such a way that can produce the energy of mindfulness, concentration, insight, communities that can create, generate the energy of brotherhood, sisterhood, happiness in the here and the now. And we don't have to consume much in order to be happy. And that is why the teaching of the Buddha on the four kinds of nutriments should be understood in order for us not to destroy ourselves, not to destroy our community, and not to destroy our planet. Instead, we know how to nourish us, to protect us, and to protect our environment. Dear friends, we are very happy today we can offer our energy in Plum Village to you who are working, have been working hard in Melbourne. And today you will hear the Dalai Lama addressing you. And this is a happy moment here in France. And I know that this is a very happy moment there also in Melbourne. Thank you very much for listening to us. Happiness is here and now. Africa.